Going Linux, episode 457, Networking, an Introduction.
Get your tech on, it's time to roll. Plug your cords in and take control. Say goodbye to the old routine. Linux is here.
Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill. Whether you're new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want, you can send us feedback at our email address at goinglinux@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, an introduction to networking. Hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm great, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for putting this together and doing the research and all the other stuff that goes into preparing an episode like this. And it looks kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. I think, we've been asked multiple times to do a networking or a series of networking shows, and that's kind of what our stick was. As far as introducing a topic and then building upon, usually a beginner and then advanced. Some episodes would go beginner and intermediate and then advanced, just depending on the subject. And networking might be one of those. It has three shows in it, but we always wanted to build upon the knowledge, so enabling people to kind of do what they want. Now, the fun part about this one is I'm not a networking guy, so I'm actually learning.
Neither am I.
I'm actually learning as I'm putting this together. So this show will be mainly just terms. So we have something to work with, because as we get into it, you're going to need to know some of these terms so you kind of know how they fit together. But we're just going to take it step by step. So we're both going to be learning along with our listeners. So that's always an exciting one when we do it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm looking forward to it. But before we get started, what's going on with you with your Manjaro? Are you still using Manjaro?
Still rocking Manjaro. I did back up and I changed the file system. I originally had it on Butter, BTRS, or whatever the acronym, and wasn't really what I wanted. So what I did is I backed up all my files, and I was going to do some help a friend out, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. But then I went ahead and picked, I've used XFS. I like that file system. So I reformatted my drive, set up the partitions how I wanted, and then reloaded everything. So that's, I'm still running Manjaro. I just changed the files underneath the file system. I backed up everything. So backup is always a good thing. So I didn't nuke and pave and start from the beginning, because I'm getting smarter in my old age. So running Manjaro, liking it still. It's Arch, but on easy mode. I found that, yes, I did like Arch, but I just want the easy mode.
Yep,
easy, I just want the easy mode. I just want it to work. So I've been using Manjaro and been very pleased. So anyway, I have a friend who has an old computer, and he wanted to go to it's an old computer, an older gentleman, so he's running Windows XP. And when he told me that, I cringed when I heard that, because it's been out of support forever. But he just checks his email and does some basic web browsing, which is kind of scary. But anyway, he has a metered network, and he needed an office, an office suite. So I was testing out maybe some open source applications to help him, at least get it up and running, because he knows XP, and even though I've tried to explain to him that you don't want to be running this, you want something different, he's kind of stuck on it. So, do what I can to help him out. And so that's what I was doing. I installed Windows 11, which was, I think in the show notes I put, it's not a horrible operating system, but it's horrible to anybody that wants control over your machine. You know, they're integrating a lot more online services and kind of integrating into the operating system, like the OneDrive and the, they want you to use the 365 service at a cost, yep. Of course. There is a free version, but it's very stripped down. But you can use it if you want. Anybody can use it if you can get it with a web browser. But they also, the default is that you have to have a Microsoft account for Home. Now, you did share a link that there's a way that you can continue to install without it, but it's kind of a new person would not realize. So okay, I can do it this way. I mean, it's something
different. Right.
So if you're a new person upgrading, you're gonna just say, well, I have to install it because that's what it puts.
It tells me I gotta. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and there's no option to say skip. But I noticed that it wants to use cloud services for your storing your files.
Right.
It wants to set to change the defaults. Every time you update, it reverts back, and it kept doing that from Firefox. It would go. I'd set Firefox my default, but it wouldn't accept all the defaults. You'd have to go in, and there's like 12 or 15 of these things that you have to say, I want Firefox. Even though you've told it, I want Firefox as the default for handling the internet files, for browsing, it still wants to use Edge. And it will complain once in a while and say, give Edge a look. Edge is safer, et cetera, et cetera. There's advertising. They're integrating what they call Copilot. Now, you can use the basic service for free, but if you want to extra special pro version, that's $20 a month. So if you have 365, you're going to be paying, I think it works out if you pay a year, about $7.99 a year. But if you pay it monthly, it's $10. So 365 will get you a little more storage. But of course, your OneDrive requires, the more files you put in there, it fills up your OneDrive. So you're going to have to upgrade that storage sooner or later. So the long story short, they're fine. They're really making Windows a more of a service. You used to be able to say, okay, I'll use Firefox, or I want to use Dropbox. No, it wants you to use. You can still use Dropbox, but every time you want to pull up a file, you want OneDrive to start. So every time I reboot, it'd start back up.
Yep. They're trying to force you to use their products.
Yeah, and Microsoft Teams was a nightmare. I shut it down, it wouldn't come back, and then there's a pro version out. So they're figuring out ways to get more money from you. So, mm-hmm. You could technically, yes, the operating system is free. Until you
Yeah. Oh, you want to use it? Oh, well, that'll be a fee. Yeah.
So I figured if you're just doing the 365 and some other, you might be paying maybe $20 to $25 a month. Paying them constantly. So because they want a subscription service. And there's advertising too, and I actually uninstalled stuff. It's like, I don't want this. It had Spotify, it had a couple things that I said, I don't want this, I don't use the services. So yeah, I see where they're going with it. Ask me how long it lasted, Larry.
How long did it last, Bill?
26 hours. Couldn't wait to get rid of it and get Manjaro. I was like, oh, thank goodness. And so it's not horrible, but they definitely have changed the way, you got this stupid thing in the center. I'm sure you can change it, but it's really, really frustrating. And yeah, there's so many privacy settings in this thing that you think you got them, and there's still another, there's more private settings and another pane or another window. You have to go watch a YouTube video to find out where everything is.
Well, yeah, that's, I've noticed that as well. And although I don't use Windows for personal use on a regular basis, I do use it for some of the work that I do at work. And, you know, it's surprising for all of the glitzy new setup applications within Windows. You click on something and it takes you to this old looking settings panel that is, gives you the other settings that you want. And then there's other settings in something else. And yeah, it's just too many places to go.
Well, you know, what's funny is, it's not really funny, but it's got so much legacy code built in that, that when they put a new updated panel, they'll have the old panel still there.
Yeah.
So you have like two or three different ways to do the same thing. It's like, oh! But they keep trying to get these subscription services. They want a software as a service. And they don't care if it's your machine. They're going to make you use their system the way they want you to use it. You might, you know, with how much can they push you? I mean, give you an example. There's a lot of i5s or i7s that will not meet the new TPM2 version. They're perfectly fine. Why are you going to throw perfectly good hardware away just because it, you can't install Windows 11 because you don't have that one little chip? It's like, oh, go buy a new computer and throw the other stuff into the landfill. That's not being a good steward of our planet. I mean, I've got a 12-year-old computer I still use that has NixOS running on it right now. And you have one that the thing probably was running, about 15 years old, still running Linux. So,
Yeah, absolutely.
Why would you want to get rid of hardware? There's no sense in buying new hardware just to run their operating system that you don't have any real true say on what they push up to you. So, no thank you.
Well, no. we've talked more about Windows than we've talked about Linux so far. So let's just put that all behind us and let's move on to, well, do you have anything else going on that we should know about?
Nope. I was just running the Manjaro, really liking it, and there are plenty of open source applications you can run on a non-Linux system. LibreOffice is really good. And so, yeah. Anyway, that's, I did upgrade my internet speed again.
Okay. Speed is addictive.
For an extra $10, I got 300 down now. So
yeah, that's where they get you. It's just an extra $10 to get this little bit more. And then it's another extra $10 to get this little bit more.
Give it to me. I want it. No, seriously. Their high tier, and it's like $55. So it's not really a bad price considering I used to pay $100 with a company called Y-Power. Yes, I will shout them out now. You know, it was like about three down if I was lucky and maybe one up. So, and it was over $100. So, yeah. For a while, you're the only game in town, so you got to pay what they want.
Yeah, monopolies will charge.
Yeah. So, anyway, Larry, today we're going to start out with a much-requested network subject. Yes! So, just to go over this for any new users, like we kind of touched on it when we were talking, you know, bantering about. We introduced the subject and laid the groundwork for the advanced shows. That's basically what the show is actually designed to do.
Yep.
First, we need to define some common terms that you will hear throughout the show series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and understanding the basic terms will help you when you listen to the advanced shows, of course. So let's get started with defining the terms for networking.
Okay. So our first term is pretty easy one. It's connection. In networking, a connection refers to pieces of related information that are transferred through a network. Basically, when you're downloading programs off the internet, that's you're using a connection to do it. So our next one is packet. A packet is the smallest unit that is intentionally transferred over a network. These little guys carry your data. They're like little helpers. They take data and move it for you.
Okay, so intentionally transferred as opposed to accidentally transferred?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah. But, yeah, you got to have some way to transfer the data. So these little guys are the guys that do it for us.
All right. Sounds good.
So, network interface. A network interface can refer to any kind of software interface to networking hardware. So that's a very generic term. Basically means that there's software that controls the hardware that lets you connect to the internet.
Okay.
So, Larry, what would be a network interface for Linux?
Let's see. That might be the Network Manager application.
You got it. You got it in one.
All right. There
you
go.
Yeah. So it's the software that controls the hardware so you can talk to internet. Okay.
I'm a network master now. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, you are. Congratulations. Our next one is called LAN, and that stands for Local Area Network. And a LAN is basically a bunch of computers connected to each other so they can talk and they can share resources.
Okay.
Okay.
So you use your network interface to set up your local area network to make a connection so that you can send packets over the internet.
Yes.
There we go. Okay.
But a LAN also does some other stuff. You can share resources. Like you can have four computers on a LAN, but they can share one printer. They can share one connection to the internet. They can share data storage. So a LAN can be used to share resources among multiple computers.
So you're setting up a network of devices. Okay, that's where the name comes from. There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Larry, I'm going to let you take these next ones. We might as well tag team some of these, if that's all right.
Sure, that's fine. Okay, the next one is WAN, WAN. And that stands for Wide Area Network. Essentially, that's your connection to the internet. So the local area network is your network at home or at work or wherever you're setting up. But Wide Area Network is the connection to the outside world, the outside internet world. So the next term to define is protocol. A protocol, according to our definition, is a set of rules and standards that define a language that devices can use to communicate with one another. So you're sending packets, but you're using a protocol to send them. So using that protocol is like the language that it's using.
So that would be like a TCP/IP.
Right.
That's a protocol for communication.
Yep, over the internet.
Over the internet.
Over your network, yeah. Okay, and the next one is a port. So now a port is an address, your network address, on a single machine that can be tied to a specific piece of software. In other words, when you use a browser, for example, it is using port 80 typically to communicate with the internet. When you are using, let's say, a piece of software that allows you to get your email, it's using a different port, and it'll have a port number. And every device that you have connected will be using a port to communicate on the network. Okay? So it's got a network address and a port number. Okay. The next one we need to define is firewall. A firewall is a program that decides whether traffic coming or going from a server should be allowed. In other words, your firewall can allow or block communications over a specific port from a specific IP address.
Yeah. And with a firewall, sometimes you'll hear the term like you'll have to open up a port in the firewall to allow this program to work. And, it, right. and so we just told you what a port was, but the firewall might automatically not have that port open. So you have to go in and open it so the program can work, because the program is expecting a port, but the firewall is blocking that port until you open it up. So it allows the traffic's allowed to come or go. So that's kind of like a guardian. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I see I've used the term IP address and we haven't defined it. So an IP address is like the physical address of the device you're using on your network or on the internet. And it's like a street address for your printer or for your computer or for something else that you've got on the network, like the router or something like that. Okay.
You know, how did I miss IP address?
I don't know, but...
I'm not perfect. Oh, well. Okay. Thank you, Larry.
That's all right. Yeah, no problem. All right, let's move on to the next definition, NAT, or N-A-T. It stands for Network Address Translation. It's a way to repackage and send incoming requests to a routing service to the relevant devices or servers on a LAN. So I know I was speaking English, but that may not have made sense to some people. So I just mentioned that we have an IP address. It tells your network where to send the packets that it is using to communicate. Well, network address translation is used when you have a network connection to the internet, and you're sending information out to the internet and bringing it back in to your local area network or the LAN. And network address translation helps to identify to the packets that are coming in where to send it once it's inside your network, your local area network. So from the internet, it's just sending it to your router, let's say. And that router is routing the information to the right device using the IP address, and the network address translation, or NAT, is what it uses to keep track of where it's supposed to go. So, yeah, let's just leave it at that.
So, basically, it takes the information from the internet and then routes it to the correct devices on your LAN.
Yes.
Okay. So that, but the devices could be a computer or a server.
Yeah, or some other device.
So yeah. So basically, it routes this the information to the correct server, device, or whatever else you have on the LAN. Yeah. And if you don't understand some of these, we'll go into them in our next episode. So don't worry if you don't understand everything. We're just trying to build a little bit of a knowledge base so we can work on increasing our knowledge to the next level. Okay?
Right.
Okay. So our next one is VPN. And I'm sure everybody's heard this. VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. And what a VPN does is, say you're at a coffee shop and you want to do some sensitive work, even if it's not sensitive. This basically creates a encrypted tunnel within the network. So you have the network and then you have this little, consider like a tunnel that goes right through it that's just for you, just for your your computing, and it provides you additional security. So no one that's not on the VPN can see what you're doing technically, and so no one can spy on you, or no one can, you know, try to intercept information. So it's like a tunnel; it's a protected tunnel through the network. Is the best way I can describe it.
Yep.
And then our SSH, and it stands for Secure Shell, and we'll get into more of that later on. But just SSH is, just remember, stands for Secure Shell, and we'll discuss that much more in depth later. DNS stands for Domain Name System, and a DNS is basically the address for things on the internet. The easiest way to understand that. And then HTTP stands for Hypertext Transfer Protocol. And a lot of times you'll see HTTPS. And HTTPS means it's still Hypertext Transfer Protocol, but it's supposed to be secure.
Right. So, and that's essentially the language that websites use.
Yes. Yes. So just when you hear that, you know, you're sending the you need to go to like HTTPS and then .google or whatever, that's what it is. It's basically the language that you use to transfer the information on the internet. Is that about right, Larry?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I know what it does. It's hard to explain sometimes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's why we're going through this. So HTTPS is the language that the internet uses for showing you pages. Another one that we don't have defined here that you may see is FTP, and it's kind of related to that. It's the language that you can use to send files between computers by way of the internet. So that's a related thing. It is different. It's a file transfer protocol. But just in case you're wondering what the difference between HTTP and FTP is, that's what it is. HTTP is for hypertext, in other words, website languages. And FTP is file languages.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can tell that we are not networking guys. We're trying to, you know, we know what a lot of this stuff does, but sometimes we learn is trying to explain it to other people. And sometimes we're like, okay, how would you send? And it kind of helps us too. So we're all learning together here. So don't yell at us too much, but we're trying.
Yeah, we're probably oversimplifying a little bit.
But, yeah, probably. But
yeah, we're trying to make it so that we understand.
Okay.
Our next term is bandwidth. So this you'll hear discussed a lot these days. And essentially, it's the amount of data that can be transferred over a given period of time. So how much data can you pump through your network pipes, if you will? Yeah. Next is Ethernet. Okay, so Ethernet is a popular type of physical network, so a wire, in other words, that uses twisted pair or can be fiber optic cables to connect devices. So if you're not using wireless, you're using Ethernet. That's when you plug the cable into your computer and it plugs into the wall or to your network router or wherever it is. That's that cable. That's an Ethernet cable. And there are different kinds, but that's Ethernet. The alternative to that is Wi-Fi. And Wi-Fi is another way to connect your devices on your network, but this time without using a wire. It allows computers, smartphones, or other devices to connect to the internet or communicate with one another wirelessly within a particular area. So it's limited in how far it can travel effectively. And much like an Ethernet cable is limited by the length of the cable, Wi-Fi is limited by how far can that wireless signal travel through the air.
Yeah, and one of the things that you'll sometimes hear is when, if you're having network problems, or say, are you using a wired or wireless connection? And that's what they mean by an Ethernet cable or Wi-Fi. And a lot of times they'll say if you're having problems with your Wi-Fi, they want you to connect your Ethernet cable to it, because a lot of times you can get a little faster speed depending on the way your house is or building is built, what kind of materials. So sometimes you'll connect a wired, and that's the Ethernet, or you'll be wireless, which is Wi-Fi. And the bandwidth kind of, you know, like you heard of me saying, I just upgraded my bandwidth. That's basically what it is. You know, I get 100 down or 10 up or whatever. That's the bandwidth. So how much data I can push through my network at one time.
There you are.
Okay. So our next one is something you'll hear. It's called Platform as a Service, or PaaS, PaaS. It's a form of cloud computing that delivers a computing platform and or solution stack as a service.
There are platforms as a service offered by multiple companies.
Okay.
Essentially, it is the software that you would use to run a computer or computers or whatever, but it's all by way of the internet, as opposed to having something physically installed on your computer.
Would that be like Amazon Web Services, AWS?
Sure. Yeah.
Or DigitalOcean. There's, because they're offering services or operating systems as a service. So that's basically a platform as a service.
Right. You're using somebody else's computer by connecting to it over the internet.
Yes. So when you hear someone say a platform as a service, you kind of know it's services in the cloud is the easiest way.
And so, some of the open source ones you may hear about are things like Red Hat OpenShift, for example, is platform as a service. And there are some others that you will hear of, but I thought I'd at least throw in an open source one in addition to some of the proprietary ones.
Yeah, you'll notice that there's a lot of services that a lot of companies will use a platform as a service because of the benefits. And we'll go over the benefits at a future date, but there are a lot of benefits to having your services hosted with either a open source company or a proprietary company. So just know that there's options. So our next one is ISP, or Internet Service Provider. And these are the guys, the companies that provide access to the internet. And so, for instance, my internet service provider is Verizon. And Larry, I think yours is what, Comcast or something?
Yeah, it's Frontier, actually.
Frontier, okay. Yep. So wherever you happen to be, or there's multiple companies, you got AT&T, Verizon, Frontier, Comcast. So that's an internet service provider. It's basically a company that's selling you access to the internet.
Yeah, and of course, we're mentioning U.S. companies because that's what we're familiar with.
Yes, and I'm sure there's there's one for our friends over the pond. I think one's called O2 might be one, I think I've heard. But then if I'm wrong, don't yell at me. Our next term that we need to understand, I'm sure everybody's heard this, is malware. And it's short for malicious software. It is any software designed to harm a computer or its user. And it also can harm a service too. So
Yeah, so, it's the stuff you want to stay away from.
Yeah, malware is not something you want to play with. And so we're going to get to something called antivirus. And now this is software to protect and remove malicious software.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that too much here.
No.
Other than to define what it is.
Yeah, so antivirus software to protect and remove malicious software. Or so it's designed to prevent malware from infecting your system.
Yep.
So our next term is gigabit Ethernet. And it's an Ethernet standard with a data transfer rate of 1 gigabit per second. So you'll hear that term sometimes when they say they're connected, they have a gigabit. And so let's see, a gigabit is, what is it, Larry? I have to look it up now. It's 1,000 bytes, is that right?
Hang on a second. Gigabit. 1 times 10 to the 9th bits.
Oh, okay. So it's fast.
That's it exactly. And it's 1.25 times 10 to the 8th bytes.
Okay.
So yeah, I found a converter online, so that's what's helping me with these conversions. There you go.
So the gigabit Ethernet, if I understand, is usually between servers, physical machines, because of the high data transfer. So if you have a couple data servers, they're connected by gigabit Ethernet. So our next one is a router. A router is a device that connects two or more packet switch networks or subnetworks. It serves two primary functions. It manages the traffic, so routers forward data packets to their intended IP addresses, effectively managing traffic between different networks, or it's sharing an internet connection. As this is more of what we think of a router. It's sharing internet connection and allows multiple devices to use the same internet connection. So that's more along the lines of what we are interested in a router. A router allows two or more computers or devices to use the same internet connection. So if you have four computers, your router is allowing all four computers to use your one connection. You don't need four different connections.
I like the definition that you have provided because it uses some of the terms we've already defined.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason I put that there was then it will build upon the next two terms that you have.
Okay. So the next term is server. So a server is a computer or system that provides resources, data, services, or other programs to other computers. Those other computers are known as clients. And it does all this over a network. In theory, whenever computers share resources with client machines, they're considered servers. There are many types of servers, including web servers, mail servers, and virtual servers. So, if your computer is sharing information with other computers, technically, it's a server.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the generic term server. A server, though, in common language, as opposed to language used by the network experts, a server is a computer that's generally speaking in a rack somewhere, in a server room that is, you know, controlling your access to or providing you access to the network or providing you access to the internet by way of that server.
Yeah. Here's an example of two. You've got Dropbox. It's a data server. So it's a storage server for your data. Or OneDrive, same thing. It's a data server for your data. So that's kind of how you can think of it. Just think of Dropbox or OneDrive or Spider Oak or whatever. They're generally used as data servers, but there's many different ones. There's print servers, like I said, or like, for instance, DigitalOcean has different servers for different things, so for print servers, whatever. It just kind of gives you an idea of the different ways. It doesn't have to be on your network. It could be on the internet, but you're using its service, and it's serving you the data so you can get things done. Does that make right. sense, Lee?
Yeah.
Okay.
It does. It does. And just another example from an internal local area network perspective, there is some software that I use called Barrier. And Barrier allows you to use the mouse and keyboard from one computer to control other computers on your network. And they all have to be on the same network in order for that to work. The computer that has the mouse and keyboard that you're using is the server. And okay. all of the other computers are clients in that case. So that's okay. an example from your internal network.
And wouldn't like a Synology drive, a backup drive that sits on your network, you know, locally, that's a server also?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. All right. And here's a term a little ambiguous in the minds of most people. Hypervisor. That's something that you hear a little bit more these days, typically not too much, not something that the average user needs to think about. But what a hypervisor is, it's a program used to run and manage one or more virtual machines on a computer. So unless you're using virtual machines for one reason or another, and you may be aware you're using it or you may not, depending on how things are set up on your network, but the hypervisor is that program that controls those virtual machines.
Yep. So,
VMware would be a hypervisor, VirtualBox would be a hypervisor program, right?
Yes. Yes. And so just so everybody, you probably will never have to, you know exactly what a lot of these terms do, but you know, when someone says, "Oh, you know, they're having a conversation," and you say, "Well, yeah, I'm using hypervisor for this," you understand it's just a program to manage another operating system or virtual machine. So you can have multiple operating systems on one. So if you have, here's a good example, you have Ubuntu, but you have hypervisors for Windows and a couple different other Linuxes. You're running multiple on Ubuntu. So that's what a hypervisor is. It's just manages virtual machines. That's it.
Yep. And maybe we should just attempt to define virtual machine now. It's running an operating system inside of your existing operating system. So you're running, let's say you've installed Ubuntu on your computer. Mm-hmm. Great. So that is your physical machine running Ubuntu. Now you want to try out something. One way to do that would be a live CD or a live USB stick. Another way to do it would be to use one of these hypervisors to set up not an actual computer, but a software-based computer called a virtual machine. And then you could use that to install another operating system inside of Ubuntu, and that can be any operating system. It can be Windows, it can be Mac, it can be another Linux distribution, it can be anything you want. Okay, so how'd we do, Bill? We're kind of at the end of our list of terms to define. There are probably a lot more terms we need to define as well. But
so that's probably going to have a couple more. And we're going to start building upon what we've already, these basic terms. And this will help lay the groundwork for the networking. like I said, we're not networking experts, so we're learning with you as for some of these. And so if it's a little rough, we're trying to explain it in simple terms. And if, you know, let us know how we do. There are more terms to be introduced as the series continues, but we wanted to begin to introduce terms so we can build upon that.
Yep.
It's network, you know, Larry, networking is not hard, but there's so many terms and protocols and stuff. You kind of have to start somewhere and build upon it. And as you notice, as we were going down the terms actually build upon each other.
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah.
It's not difficult, but it is complex. In other words, there are a lot of moving parts.
Yes, a lot of moving parts. And, you know, for instance, I forgot to put a virtual machine in here. And it's like, well, or what was the other one I forgot?
yeah.
So
FTP.
FTP. Yeah. So we're not perfect, but we're really trying. So we're excited to do this. And just, as we get along, you know, our knowledge will increase as it increases with you. So, what did you call it? The teacher is one step maybe ahead of the student.
Yes, exactly.
But we want to introduce this, and so we're excited to do this. So, Larry, do you have a software recommendation?
I do. It's one that you've made in the past as well. It's called Blanket. And you can install Blanket on Linux using a flat hub. And I think there are some other ways to install it as well. But essentially what it is a way to listen to ambient sounds. And you can use those ambient sounds as just background while you're trying to do your work. And the idea is to help you focus or increase your productivity by listening two sounds of water or birds chirping or something like that. And you can also use it to fall asleep in a noisy environment or a number of other things to help you meditate, whatever. But it's ambient sounds.
Which I have done. And I've actually, certain times of year, I have neighbors that have loud parties. And so I will turn Blanket on, and it kind of blocks out a lot of noise. Also, when I concentrate, you know, you don't want to listen to music, but you just want something to not be totally quiet. That I find that listening to that helps me think of and when I'm writing something. So anyway, that's why I put it in there. And I think the flat hub is a fairly new addition. I think it also has a snap. So you should be able to also find it in repositories. So if you're interested in it, I thought, you know, for productivity, you might just mention it again.
Yeah.
So I do have a game recommendation. And okay. It's Dota 2. And Dota is on Steam, of course. Dota 2 is a multiplayer online battle arena, or MOBA. I always say MOBA. And the game is produced by Valve, the company behind Steam. It is a standalone game, and follow up to like a Defense of the Ancients, which is a modification of Warcraft 3 game. And if you've played Warcraft 3, is you would know it's kind of a control and conquer different areas, you know, attack this person's base, etc. But Dota 2 is a fantasy style game consisting of two teams of five players. And you might say, and it's done online, and you have a whole bunch of different characters with different abilities, and so as you play this game, you'll find the characters that work well, and you have to work with your team and strategize on how to capture the other or destroy the other person's base. So it's a lot of fun. And it's totally free to play. So I thought that would be a good one. The game that costs no money to play. I like it.
Yeah. Sounds great.
Yep.
All right. And we'll, of course, have links to both of these recommendations in the show notes, as always. We also, as we're ready to wrap up here, our next episode, of course, will be listener feedback. But we're interested in getting your feedback on our new music. So if you can spend a moment, send us an email or voicemail or whatever you want to make a comment on the new theme music that we have. It would be great to get to know what you think of it.
Yeah. I liked it, Larry. Personally. Yeah,
so did I.
Yeah. So until then, you can go to our website at goinglinks.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe.
We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinks.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
And our theme music is made with Suno at suno.com.